another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Jed Hartley, son of a false prophet and former member of the International House of Prayer. Jed, I am going to heavily target the son of the false prophet thing in this episode. There's so many things happening. Looked at, you know, Mike Winger. Mm-hmm. He put out all of his stuff on Bethel, and it's, I think it's step one and some other things that he has to come, but it's all about exposing this fakery and,
yeah,
and then the problems that come from that fakery, because it's not just that there are false prophets and fake nonsense and nonsensical doctrines. It's that many of these people who are in this, they go on because they're fakes and frauds in the first place. They go on and they do more extreme, horrifically bad things. And to a Christian, I guess you would say the theology is probably the worst thing. But to those who are in other categories, you look at the predators that have come out of this, and it all comes back down to this one central fact that many of the people in this movement just simply aren't what they claim to be, and they're fakery. They're false prophets, and they have sons of false prophets, such as yourself.
Yeah. Well, and this is, I think I may have even talked about it on our last video that we had, but when I was watching Mike Winger's video because I was talking with some people that he were on that video, and just some people who were in the mix of everything that's going on, and I constantly was reminded just of how rotten all of it is from the very root. And I use that phrase quite often, and the thing that kept coming up with me was this idea, this notion that, like, I grew up believing we have all sinned, we have all fallen short of the glory of God. And that was repeated so many times that it was Jesus who redeemed all of us, and that we were all kind of in this sense sinners, and we are all redeemed by faith. And so we are both in the same boats of fallen sinners who are all then redeemed. And there's these two sort of like this sort of transformation, and it equalizes everyone within the community. And I've been thinking about how intentionally that was really latched onto. Obviously, the Pentecostal New Apostolic Reformation was not the pioneers of this sort of doctrine. That's been a long doctrine of, like, the American church, certainly. But I think what is becoming very clear is how much these NAR and leaders, IHOP leaders, Bethel leaders, Morningstar leaders, my own father, Sean Bowles, all of these individuals latched onto this idea of, well, we're all fallen. And in this way of equalizing some of the really predatory sins that were going on behind the scenes with them, to make it seem like, well, we all have lust that we deal with, lust of the flesh in some way. Some people crave fatty foods. Other individuals do that, you know, like it's just a way of making it so that everybody felt similar in the dark. And I just, it is not normal what was going on behind the scenes. What probably is still going on behind the scenes, the deception, the corruption, the abuse that was going on with my father, with Sean Bowles, with Mike Bickle, with Bill Johnson, all of these different extremely prominent characters. The level of depravity was just not the same. It's not, we're not all in the same boat. We're just not. It's the sins, and I want to say more than just sin, because I don't want to put it just in a sort of specific Christian context, just from a universal moral perspective, just the depravity, and abuse that was being committed again, I'm using this past tense, but like I think many of this is still going on. It's just so profoundly corrupt, and it is not, you cannot separate the sin from the sinner. You cannot separate what was going on in this community from you can't pull the baby out with from the bathwater in this sense. Like, it's all one and the same, because it was intentionally made it this way. We'll get into it more, but like, I think that it's just becoming clearer and clearer that the men who got elevated in this community were men who were entirely corrupt, because it was this sort of whole house of cards in which everybody needed to have dirt on other people, and they all needed to be aware. There needed to be this sort of mutually assured destruction in order for them to even elevate to a place of prominence within the community. And I think that's why I uniquely was able to see a lot of what was going on behind the scenes, because I sort of got grafted into this entire sort of leadership community just because my dad would tag me along. And my dad, more than probably any of these individuals, had his flaws all on his sleeve. I mean, he was very apparently flawed, even in just a sort of generic character sense in the way that he presented himself. So I think that he was one of those individuals who became very easily and quickly grafted into the community, despite him being a wild card and untrustworthy and all of these different things, because he so apparently was not going to betray the trust of these men because he had so much dirt on himself. Unfortunately, he was bringing his son along, and I was able to see a lot of these things, and I don't know. So I was sort of one of the exceptions to the rule of someone who is not like I was elevated and I was a speaking voice or anything like that. But I saw a lot of these behind the scenes meetings that the more I get older and the more we talk, I realize I really should not have been privy to these particular things.
You know, it's really powerful whenever you look at the victims and then the victims speak out. That's one of the most powerful things in all of this. But I think what Mike Winger's video did, it showed that there was a systematic cover-up. It wasn't just one or two people. There was a system of cover-up. And one of the things that we have today that we didn't have in the past, we have almost instant access to information. But more than that, we have instant access to communication. So when some fraudster does the fraud thing, you can usually see it in a YouTube video. You can watch it on their sermons that they're publishing on their websites. Then you've got these people who are analyzing it that they can find the fraud and then put it out on social media. So within, I don't know, 10 minutes of somebody saying something that's just ridiculous, you might have somebody out there who's exposing it. Whereas back in the 40s and 50s, whenever Latter Rain exploded, you really didn't have that. You did have people pointing out that the things were wrong, but usually the power of the movement was more powerful of a force than the critics could contain. So even though there were critics out there who were exposing left and right, their voices weren't heard. And that dynamic has shifted and turned upside down. And you watch through what he's presenting and you're overwhelmed. It's just all of this information is leading towards the fact that there is a systematic cover-up. I wish that we had the same level of information from back in the early days of the research, because if you read between the lines of everything that I've published so far, my research suggests, and can never prove because all of these people are dead, but it suggests that this system of cover-up has evolved over the years and has actually been fine-tuned. It's not that this was some random thing that there were just a couple of people who were doing and they're a couple bad guys. Baby in the bathwater example, it's not even that there's any bathwater. I mean, I hate to say it, but you go back and I've only taken just a few trails of history. You can find them on the website. Generally, I go back to John Alexander Dowie because he was the biggest fraud, con man, con artist, organized criminal that there was in the in religious history in America, everybody wanted to pattern their ministries after that. So every fraudulent thing that he did, and I've got them pretty well documented, all of those things were copied, and everybody who copied them knew, and they systematically pretended that they didn't know. Then they built their empires after Dowie died, many of them doing the same thing. And so take, you know, there were hundreds, maybe thousands of these people, but say there's just five. You get five people that emerge from Dowie's empire, and they get together and say, hey, look, we can do the same things. We can. John Lake is one of the people who helped Dowie with his fraudulent activities and faith healing. You can find that well documented if you search online for John G. Lake, con man. You can find this. There's a whole thesis written about this. He was helping to organize the con that Dowie was doing. Well, if you take that and say there are five people, well, five people are doing it. Each of the five know what each other is doing because they're copying the same con. But they're none of them, even though they may not be aligned in theology, they may even pretend to be enemies, they're not going to out each other, because if you out one guy, the other guy is instantly outed, right? So you could have your mortal enemy who you do not like, who you disagree with his theology, etc., and you say, that guy, he's got a real gift, but he's not used by God. You say stupid stuff like this, right? Knowing that it is a con man. And mm-hmm. So then those five train other people. They die out. The five turns into 50. The 50 turns into 500. It just keeps going and going. And there's a point, which I'll get into this later, but there's a point when there are so many people who are involved in the con that they start to believe that the con is actually a good thing. There's a Gnostic group that believed that you could tell lies for the sake of a holy end. And Irenaeus wrote about this, but there are people who actually believe, if I can get people's faith high enough, even though it's fraudulent, and get them to believe in what I'm doing, they will, because I'm pretending to be Christian, they will believe in Jesus. And I said pretending very loosely there. They will see my false version of Christianity, and they will come to Jesus. And therefore, if I lie to them and make them come, am I not doing God's work? That's really the theory behind all of this. So you have all of these men who are propping each other up, and where it gets really funny, which we'll get into later in the episode, they know all the dirt on each other, and they use it to their advantage.
This thing that you were talking about of when people begin to think of it as like, they more than just excuse it, they think that this is actually a good thing, the lying, like, okay, well, we'll do this deception in Jesus's name sort of thing. I think that I've seen it at least be this sort of weird cognitive dissonance issue, certainly with my father. I also believe that I have seen this. I don't know him as well, but just seeing the patterns. But with Sean Bowles, I wouldn't be surprised if he had similar thinking. But, you know, these men are clearly fabricating prophecy in a way that it's not, you know, it's different than like, oh, I think I had this dream, and in this dream I am interpreting it, and I'm not sure if that's God, but like, whatever, I'm just gonna sort of delusionally go into it. I mean, that's one level of like self-deception. The other is when you pull things off of Facebook and you're telling, oh, God gave this to me. I mean, obviously there has to be some level of cognitive dissonance where you know for a fact that you are deceiving this person, where you are presenting information that you clearly got through natural means, and you're pretending and putting on this sort of performance to make it feel like a religious spectacle, to make it a religious spectacle. But because there's this sort of like, well, I'm helping people deepen their belief in God, and there's this immediate and narcissistic itch that's scratched by doing it, where one of the powerful stories, and she's a good friend of mine, and I've been on her podcast before, and she was mentioned in this Sean Bowles video with Mike Winger, but Jubilee Dawns, she was a member at Bethel, And she got a prophecy from Sean Bowles about, well, actually her then ex, or her, at the time, her boyfriend, who she then married, and then he was abusive and tried to, or he did strangle her. Like it was extremely, an extremely tragic situation with Jubilee, where he was, her boyfriend, then husband, was abusive. But because she believed in these prophecies, so Sean Bowles gave her these prophecies about them being together, and about the Lord actually giving Jubilee to this man, there was this sort of spiritual authority that rested on their marriage that made it incredibly hard for her to feel permission to break free of that and to break up with him, or then later divorce him, because she felt like this was sort of this ordained thing from the Lord. But if you back up to when Bowles gives this prophecy, he gives this prophecy about two young people, and he thinks, I mean, he probably doesn't think twice about it and says, oh, I am going to anoint their marriage, and this is only going to do good things, because there's this sort of like, well, they're going to be confident that God has blessed their marriage, and what young couple wouldn't benefit from having this sort of belief that God's going to bless their marriage? And in some instances, that probably was, I don't know if fine is the right word, because it's always inherent, like deception will always lead to corruption, and in any situation, like no solid foundation of a marriage or anything can be built on this shaky, deceptive ground. But I can get, from a sort of removed perspective, how people like Sean and my dad were able to excuse the things that they were doing, because they thought that the tree was producing good fruit, and they refused to see or investigate how it was producing any bad fruit, because it's only positive testimonies, only people who come up and say, oh my goodness, your dad, to people who come up to me. I mean, I only ever heard the positive testimonies. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of negative testimonies, but who's going to say that? Who's going to come up to my dad and tell him, hey, you said this and it was wrong, you know? Or who's going to go to Sean Bowles and say, hey, you or bless this marriage, and then he was abusive, and no, you're not going to hear about that. And unless it's in a situation like this, where Jubilee is speaking up now, and really, where you're really having to hit the big red button, and you're having to talk about corruption systemically within the entire church, you can't really ever express negative testimonies within that community. You can only express positive ones, unless you're totally ousted and are on the completely opposite side, doing what you and I and Jubilee and Mike are doing by exposing the whole thing. So I totally understand how this system continues to prosper and continues to corrosively build itself around this insidious exploitation of its people.
You know, there's another thing that it is pointing out when you read through not only his video, but all of the people who are doing the same thing. Right now we have, I don't know how many hundreds of people that are doing the same thing, because they're seeing the same thing across all these ministries. One of the things that is pointing out is a different kind of victim that I think often gets missed. You've got, you know, the victims of criminal activities, which we've talked about with, you know, Mike Bickle, etc. The things that are really, really awful. And yes, those are really awful. But there's another type of victimization that is happening, in that these people are systematically rewriting and rewiring what it even means to be a prophet, so that they can groom the people to believe that if they come up with a whim, and they call it prophecy, it's good. It came from God. And if that whim just happens to be wrong, it doesn't matter, because that's the type of prophecy that God gives us, this kind that is flaky. It might be true, it might not be true. And then I can apologize and say, well, I lied. It's not a prophecy. And it doesn't matter because I was in tune with the prophetic. They've got this weird framework. So what they're doing is they're literally... And I hate to say it, but it seems like it's widespread, systematically rewiring the heads to be receptive to this type of idea, so that even more of these empires can be built upon that type of framework. Right now, I'm the God of this room. I can tell you, if I were to say to you, Jed, in this corner behind me, there is a ukulele. I'm the God of this room. I know what's in this room, and you can believe what I say is true because this is my room. Well, these guys who are claiming prophetic, let's clear up the definition of this for those who don't know what a prophet is. A prophet is somebody who steps their mind out of the way and God speaks through their mouth. So it's God actually speaking. So if God is speaking and says, there is a, I don't know, there is a big accordion hanging on the wall behind me, and I say this, well, I'm the God of this room and you believe it, and then I say, oops, I was wrong. It wasn't an accordion, it's a ukulele. Well, you're going to think I'm a fool because I should know what's in my own room. Yet the people don't look at God this way. God says this thing and then suddenly it's not true. Well, oh my gosh, I got it wrong. I'm sorry, but I was in tune with the prophetic. What they've done is they have coerced the people to believe this thing about prophets and prophecy that is not real, so that they can take it a step further and they can hijack their minds and abuse them for it. And even further than that, they can abuse their pocketbooks with it. Where it gets interesting, Branham, whenever he was part of the framework, which we'll get into that in a minute, when he was laying all of this out, he would combine verses to make new Bible verses that didn't exist. And one of them, he would say, the Bible says that I was born in sin, shaped in iniquity, come into the world speaking lies. Those are two different verses, one talking about the good people and one talking about the bad people. Well, he combined them, like, I don't know if you remember the Budweiser commercials. I want to watch sumo wrestling. I want to watch ballet dancing. Let's watch both, right? That's kind of what this is. And then he would proceed to tell all of these lies. And then it's okay because he was born in sin, shaping in iniquity, just like the rest of us. It's okay if he lies. Mm-hmm. But no, it's not okay if he's claiming that God is speaking through his mouth, thus saith the Lord. God can't be wrong if it's a prophecy. What it ends up is, it's not prophecy. These guys are just pulling things out of their butt. What's interesting is, you know, you could walk into my room, you could obviously deduce that I'm in a musician's room and I've got a bunch of instruments, and without even looking, you might say, and you, John, you have a guitar. Well, you're doing an odds game, right? A numbers game. A lot of that is what this is. They will say things that may come true, but they're doing this fake thing and they don't really know. It's not whenever they say God is speaking through their mouth. If they speak five times and it's true, and then the sixth time they say something that God didn't say, we have to wonder, is any of it true, or are they just pulling it out of their butt? And I've come to the conclusion that there's a lot of butt-made prophecies.
Well, and I think you addressed something that I've struggled to figure out how to address myself, of some of the like hidden victims of this group. I think are some of the genuine people who could be pastors, who could be ministers, who could be individuals within this guy. I mean, it's completely eliminated the any elevation of the genuine within this community. There are anybody who and I don't want to get into too much of like whether or not I believe in the gifts of the Spirit or any of thing like that. I'll tell you just flat out, I am very skeptical of all of those things. But regardless, I still think that every community births a wide variety of character in its people, and the community at large has a lot of really genuine, passionate, compassionate people who have all sorts of virtue and are really radically trying to be their best people unto God and unto others, you know, love God, love others, love, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, you know, trying to extol the virtues of Christianity. I've seen that within the community very well. I've not seen it within the leadership. And I think what's happening is because you have these people at the top who need to have dirt on each other, who don't really believe the things that they are saying and believe in this sort of falsified, manufactured prophecy that is totally excused, you then have individuals who are honest and integrous have no path for any sort of future within this community. They have to leave the community. And I think that that's a great tragedy to these individuals and also to the community at large, because like you're killing all of you're cutting down all of the fruitful trees of the community, because the fruitful trees would show that the rest of the trees are bearing bitter fruit. And I think it is fascinating and very more than just problematic, depressing is probably the word that I'm thinking of, but that all of these individuals, I mean, certainly for me, it is a very heavy thing to come to terms with the fact that like the people who are the leaders of this community don't even believe the things that they are saying, like are not dated. If you believe in a God who speaks to people, who cares about people, who genuinely is able to give visions and dreams and prophecies to various individuals, it's not these people. Like they do not believe that, because if they did, they would hold a sort of holy reverence for it. You know, they would be the ones who would be protecting this and looking for the wolf among the sheep. You know, they would be looking for the people who are deceiving it, because they, you need to protect. You need to protect that which is holy, and not dilute it with that which is manufactured. That's just logically a necessity. You know, if you think that there's going to be gold within it, you have to mine for the gold. You don't just take the fool's gold and the real gold and lump it all together. That doesn't make any sense. That totally invalidates the genuine. And anybody who is within that world and actually cares for the genuine obviously is going to try to protect and preserve it. And the fact that these men are not trying to do it is a great indication that they don't believe it. They do not believe. I'm saying this with, of course I can't know it for sure. I do not think my dad believes that God speaks to people. I do not think Mike Bickle believes that God speaks to people. I do not think Bill Johnson believes that God speaks to people. Not in the way that they pretend it is. I think that they may believe some of their, you know, aspects that like there is some sort of thing that they can tap into, or they believe they themselves are God. Like that they, if they speak, then God makes it happen. Sort of like that they whatever they say is God ordained, just because, you know. So if I find revelation on Facebook and I speak it out, it's coming from God, because I myself am an extension of God. And I really do think that it is that level of self-deception, where there isn't this sort of division between them and their deity. They are their deity.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. So let's talk a bit about Paul Kane. I believe, if I remember the schedule correctly, it comes out right the week before this one, but we received from Mike Winger a transcript of a recording from Paul Kane. I shared it with you. It's
right.
Paul Kane and some various other people. And there are several of these. It's not like there's just one. There exists out in the world somewhere all of these recordings where men have dirt on other people. Charles and I walked through how this works in the message because I hate to say it, many of these things were built on top of William Branham's message framework and ideology more than people recognize, more than they realize. And the strategy that was employed is very much the same. Well, Paul Kane was part of the ones who was doing the same kind of strategy. And it created another layer of victim that I think Mike Winger actually brought this up, but I don't think it's been hit as hard as it could. I know he will probably hit it hard in the future, but when these men claim to be prophets, what they do is they try to trick you into believing that they are in tune with God. They reshape what prophet means in your head so that if whatever they predict is false, it's okay because they're in tune with the quote-unquote prophetic. Then what they also try to do is they try to make themselves at a higher level of human than you are. You're down here, I'm up here, therefore whatever I say, I'm your spiritual authority. I'm your spiritual guideline, your mediator between God and man, whatever you want to call this. Well, the way they do this is they try to trap you in believing that God is actually speaking through them, because if they do, Branham is the one who laid this out perfectly, and he got it from Bosworth, who got it from Dowie. So this was a Dowieite type of doctrine. But once you have that prophetic authority, then the word of the Lord becomes like a psychological trap. You can't leave, because here's where God is. God is in this one. It's not in the church down the street. If you leave to the church down the street, you're going away from God. So mentally you become trapped. And that is how all of this system of cults has kind of bypassed the public view for so long. There aren't compounds with walls, with physical walls. Branham and others, Dowie is just one in a long line of men doing the same thing, and women doing the same thing. They identified the fact that if you can make the walls inside somebody's head, there's no way that you can pass any law that makes me a criminal for doing it. It's their own fault. They could have walked away if they wanted. It's not my fault. And then they tried to claim this prophet card, false prophecies, etc., to try to make the people believe that they're God. Well, one of the ways that they did this, Charles and I will hopefully hit this in the future, but there were different tricks that they would do as this faith healing movement was emerging. I've mentioned with you, Branham used to have this thing where he would hold his hand out and his hand would change colors. And that was diagnosing the disease,
right?
And it's a trick. You put something under your arm and squeeze and the blood flow to your arm shuts off. You can turn your hand purple if you want to. And he would say, if it turned purple, God can't heal you. He would say things like this. Well, about the time that the Voice of Healing magazine got into such incredible publication, they've got mailing list of, I think they said it was hundreds of thousands of people on that mailing list. So you got hundreds of thousands of people sending their names and addresses to you. In the front cover, it said, send a copy to your friend. Recommend that they too. And there would be forms you could fill out. One of the forms, and I tried to find it for this video, and I'm going to have to dig, but one of the forms says, is your friend sick? So you can write down your friend's disease, name, address. Well, then suddenly, after all of this happens, suddenly you have this array of prophets, not just Branham, but they're all saying, I can tell you your name and your address. Mm-hmm. And they're all part of that Voice of Healing conglomeration. Well, they have a database of names and addresses. Where that comes into full force is, I've had multiple people tell me this. I did not witness it, but multiple people have said that Paul Kane was caught in a hotel room with stacks of phone books reading them, which tells me two things. Number one, this is where he's getting his names and addresses. Number two, he probably had a photographic memory. Because that's the only reason you would do this, right? Mm-hmm. So if you came into this movement with a photographic memory, you were one of the top ones, man. This was a big deal. So Paul Kane elevates himself in this manner, and he advertises himself as another William Branham. I have strongly suspected that Branham also had a photographic memory, and he was doing memorization techniques. You can read it all through mm-hmm. sermons. So there were these kind of gimmicks that were happening with names and addresses, and it all kind of started right whenever they had a database of names and addresses. Well, all of the people who were doing the gimmick know how each other are doing the gimmick. There came a point when they were at such odds, they were like almost into a fist fight. They're revolving around, in fact, Jim Jones mentions it. Branham mentions it happens with Jones in Chicago, I think it was. They all started fighting, like 300 ministers, Branham says, were fighting, and they were at odds. And he claimed it was over a specific doctrine. But here's the funny part. They could attack the doctrine and take either, it was a racial issue. They could take either side of the racial issue, but none of those men could say, and oh, by the way, we're all doing the same trick. Because if you expose the guy to the room next to you that you cannot stand, well, he's going to expose you back. So it turned into this thing where they themselves become trapped. It's a different kind of trap, right? Well, that continued to evolve and continued to evolve until Cain was one of the smarter ones. He started recording conversations, because not only do I have the dirt of knowing how these people are doing what they're doing, I got all the dirt of them admitting it on recording. And that we went through the transcripts of one of those recordings. But where it gets really interesting is, you know, the political nature of some of the sins that are involved in this. Cain, according to that transcript, and I'm certain you've read it, but he did not want his name to get out tied with homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew that he was, but he did not want it to make out, you know, to get public, because he might lose his ministry over that. In the same conversation, they're talking about the fake, the fakery that he was doing, and he was a fraud, and Chuck Smith called him out for it. And Chuck Smith basically, he grilled him like two or three times. Well, what about the fraud? And the conversation kept getting redirected to the homosexuality, which was interesting to me, because they put more emphasis on that as the bad thing than they did the fakery. Mm-hmm. And they're all doing the fakery. So when I read that conversation, I was like scratching my head thinking, do they not know that all of it is wrong? They should just confess the whole thing.
It's also why I harp on so much the prophetic manipulation, because it enabled all of the sexual predation. And so that, I mean, and with Cain, because it's so funny, because I grew up in this world, and Paul Cain was, there was only probably four or five instances that I remember being in the same room with Paul Cain where he was preaching. And I don't ever remember talking to him myself. With Bob Jones, I remember several times, but with Paul Cain, it wasn't as much. But I do remember him talking, but he was more of this sort of legacy figure within the community. And my dad would talk about how he had issues of homosexuality, and meanwhile, especially in the 90s, early aughts, and I'm sure still today, I mean, homosexuality was one of the big things that separated our community from other Christian communities, and obviously other secular communities, is that the New Apostolic Reformation, the IHOP, the sort of latter rain movement was so, it was abortion and homosexuality were the demons that were corrupting, you know, America. And so our rabid sort of attacking of homosexuality was then put in a weird position against Paul Cain. Now, later, as I grew up, the issue of what Paul Kane was doing was about sexual predation. It wasn't just about, you know, homosexuality. It was that he was preying on young men too. It wasn't, it was criminal and abusive activity. It wasn't just, you know, sexual immorality. But again, it was framed in this sexual immorality stance. And I think that the reason why Kane probably had this defensive nature is because there was the same sex aspect of what was going on with him, where with all of the other individuals, they were preying on women. So it was, you know, Bob Jones, he could get away with what he was doing. Mike Bickle could get away with what he was doing because, well, this isn't something that we are rabidly attacking from the pulpit every single week. And so I get why all of the conversations sort of gravitated back towards that, because that was sort of the one sin in the community that was inexcusable, because it had to be. I also know this was similar to something that happened with my dad, because when my dad was young, and this is so this is all what I heard from him. I don't know the details of this, but I know that when he was younger, he had a girlfriend, she got pregnant. And I from what I understand is that she went and got an abortion, and he was in support of that when he was a young, I think he was even young Christian, and it wasn't clear whether that happened before or after his sort of salvation story or whatnot. But those are sort of the like unforgivable sins within the community that you wouldn't talk about. It really is corrupt how much everything that wasn't those two issues was totally condoned and excusable even today. Now, like, I know that Mike Bickle right now has hundreds, if not thousands of people. Oh, no, certainly thousands of people who are brushing off what he did, because it's in this sort of context of like, well, you know, people cheat on their wives and people cheat on prophecy, and people will, you know, young women, she was 14, 15, but whatever, she was still like a young woman, not a girl. You know, just the way that people will keep moving the sort of goalpost of their morality to basically nothing, where there just is, it's sort of this completely almost hedonistic, zero moral boundary and framework. And then they cling to the one or two things that are outside of their framework, the one or two things, whether it's abortion or homosexuality or whatever it is. And then they are so rabidly against those things, because it's, that's how they kind of draw the line. They make it so broad and so permissible for everything that's going on within their own lives and within the lives of the heroes around them, so that they can be then completely and utterly cruel to people who are homosexuals, or, you know, to the LGBTQ community, like, because this is where they drew those lines. And I think it's frankly disgusting. I think it's so corrupt, and I think it's so it produces such bitter fruit even within people's own lives, because there's just zero sense of moral accountability within the community. There's zero sense of virtue within the community, because there's just this hatred of everybody who slips outside of this moral framework that they have sort of arbitrarily drawn, and this total acceptance of everybody within it, despite horribly horrific things going on within the community. And there's few things that are so obviously corrupt and yet totally condoned in this community. It's just this delineation of moral, this moral line that is drawn that makes it totally acceptable for leaders to groom people, to have fraud, to commit all sorts of heinous acts, and it's inexcusable.
It is. And you know, the thing that's really being brought out, and Winger, I think, did this very good justice, is that there is no accountability. And because of the way that they have systematically organized where they're helping each other do this thing, it's literally a framework to avoid accountability.
Yeah.
And we saw that in the tape with Chuck Smith and Paul Kane, right? The accountability, that should have been broadcast. This guy's a fraud, man. That should have been broadcast. And you can see Kane had enough dirt on Smith that Smith wrote the letter, sent it out, and said, I retract what I said about his homosexuality, and I disagree about a certain doctrine. But where is the fact that there was a fraud in our midst and he robbed you guys of money? Where's that part? Well, that part was completely omitted because they're all doing the same thing. They all have some sort of a gimmick, and they each know what each other's doing. It's like a bunch of magicians. They get on stage. If a magician is in the crowd, they know what the guy's doing on stage, but they're not going to point it out, because then whoever goes to his stage act, they're going to see the same thing, and, oh, well, you told me how that worked. Well, that's how this is, man. You've got all of these different stage acts who are in each other's audiences, who know exactly what's happening, know exactly the tricks they're using. And so what it does, it makes a movement that's just completely devoid of accountability.
Totally. And again, goes back to makes a community that only the corrupt lead to or come to power. I remember talking with Jubilee a long time ago about this, where she was like, do you think that everyone's bad in this world? And I was like, well, not everyone, but certainly everyone who's a leader. And I know that that's like that's a very hard line to hold. But the more and more we go through this, the more I see these transcripts, the more I listen to, testimonies of people who were abused by Sean Bowles and by all of these different individuals, the more and more I shouldn't be shocked anymore. I watched that. I was listening to Mike Winger's video, and I knew most of the things that were going to come up in that video because I've been talking to some of the same victims, and yet still, I was shocked. I was shocked by the level of depravity. We kind of didn't address it, but readdress what was going on. It wasn't just fraud. Sean Bowles was also had a habitual routine of sexually abusing his staff members, as he would constantly undress in front of them and pleasure himself in front of them. And this is very talked about in way more detail in that video, and perhaps maybe we'll get into this at some point, but just the broad strokes of it is that he was also doing this very predatory sexual immorality and using his sort of authority to do so. He would sort of use spiritual language and his spiritual authority to sort of condone and put in his staff members in their place when they would try to speak out against him or anything like that, which caused, despite the fact that this was, so several of those victims then went forward, and this was known about Sean Bowles for, I think it was like almost a decade or for at least 5, 6, 7 years, this information was like very well known within the leadership. There's in Mike Winger's video, there's a clip, an audio clip of several different people, Stacey Campbell, Patricia King, Cheyenne, Chris Valentin, I think were all in this phone call where they were talking explicitly about the things that I just told you. And yet, he's continued to be platformed. Bowles continued to minister and speak, and it showed Like what Bowles was saying to his staff members was like, fall in line, do as I say, like this, I can do this, and don't be prude about it. Like I can do what I want. And he was right. In some respect, he was right. Like the community, the leadership, he knew the leadership wasn't gonna do anything about it. I mean, maybe there was going to be some consequences. Maybe he wasn't going to be able to speak at this conference or that conference, but he wasn't going to be publicly, you know, there wasn't going to be anything. In fact, I wonder if that actually helped his bid for prominence in the community, because now in this sort of way that we have dirt on each other, now it's like, well, I can get him if the more I leverage him. Like Bill Johnson, after this, Bill Johnson goes on and publicly supports Sean Bowles, even makes a statement about how he's one of the most prophetic individuals of our times, and gives a foreword on his book, because if Bill Johnson honors this man, like there's no way that Bowles is ever going to betray Bill Johnson, because now Bill Johnson has absorbed and been like, has seen this very like sort of fathering, like, oh, you come to me broken, I will protect you. And I saw Bill Johnson do this with my dad. It's like, come, you weak and broken, and I will help heal you. And he almost invited and was excited. Like, I don't think that it is a coincidence that two of the major prophetic voices that Bill Johnson has lashed himself to, at least that I know of what he's spoken about in closed doors and publicly, like the three prophets that he endorsed and most used for his own personal sort of political and church movements, like insofar as him saying, this is the course of where we're heading as a church, he used my dad. So Bob Hartley, Bob Jones, and Sean Bowles. These were the major prophets that Bill Johnson were using. What is the linking aspect of all three of those individuals? One, they all have very obvious mental illness. They all are very obviously broken. You don't even have to hear the stories behind them just speaking up front, not even in a insidious way, just in a, you can tell. I mean, Bowles is maybe a little bit more put together than my dad or Bob Jones was, but there's sort of the madman aspect of it. They all were pretty obviously and apparently fraudulent, and were using fraudulent information to fuel their prophecy. And they all were really explicitly sexually abusing other individuals. And Bill Johnson knew about this both before, during, and after, you know, like he platformed them before he knew about it, during, when he knew about it, and then after. And I don't think that it's a coincidence. I think that he likes bringing in these broken, corrupt, horrible individuals, because then he can sort of control them, and he can control the narrative. And I saw this firsthand. We're going long now, so sorry about this, John, but this is my last thought. But I saw this happen firsthand, is that when my dad and I in 2023, I know I've told this story before, but we went to Bethel. And this was before I knew about all of the sexual abuse that was going on that my dad had perpetuated, but Bill Johnson certainly knew about it. And my dad goes into that meeting desperate, just absolutely desperate to prove himself to Bill Johnson. He would say anything that he could to show and get Bill Johnson to sort of bless him again, and to allow him sort of back into the fold, because he is right there on the outs of the community, because he has clearly done some horrific sexual abuse and Bill Johnson knows about it. And in this meeting, my dad gives Bill exactly what Bill wants, which Bill had just His wife had died the year before. Bill had started dating a younger woman who he had known for a very long period of time. And by younger woman, I think there was like 20, 30 years in between Bill and this woman. So she was in her 40s, I believe. But people were really... people within the community were like, this feels iffy. Benny just passed away and you're already dating this young woman. And my dad comes in and gives prophetic permission for Bill to be with this woman. And clearly he pretends like he got it from God, that he had no idea. There was just an email, a wide email that was released the morning before about Bill dating this woman. So like, it's common knowledge if you're within the Bethel community, which my dad is obviously plugged into the Bethel community. And so my dad says that he had this dream, and it's like, he just got the email this morning. Like, I literally saw it happen. I talked with my dad about the email before he gave the prophecy. It is quite clearly obvious what is going on. You need no level of discernment. And Bill Johnson is not an idiot. He's not, he obviously could know that my dad is manufacturing this, but this is what Bill wants. Bill wants someone to come in and give him prophetic permission to do the thing that he wants to do. And then he can kind of anoint my dad and make him into this mythical individual behind the scenes. It's perfect for him. And I know now that that's what he was doing. I didn't know this at the time. I thought Bill was mad at my dad when this happened. Like, when I was in this meeting, I was embarrassed for my father. I was like, oh my goodness, this is quite clearly so obvious what you're trying to do. You're trying to offer him something in this deceptive way. Like, clearly Bill is going to see through this. I thought Bill was annoyed with him during that meeting. But then turns out, I've heard from several different accounts that Bill was going around and telling people that he had been given prophetic permission from one of the grand prophets, that he, you know, God has ordained this union between him and this woman. And of course, they then broke up because... I don't know more details of that, but of course it wasn't God ordained, because this is all fabricated anyway. So I know people have felt like, well, why is Bill getting involved with this? He hasn't done these things. He's not innocent throughout all of this. And he has built it sort of similar to the way that, Paul Cain did. He absorbs the broken individuals around him because he can manipulate them.
The leaders that are doing this, that's an inherent evil that they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're doing it at the risk of just totally destroying lives. That's really the problem of all of this. So I wish that I could put a stop to it, and there just simply isn't a way. And yeah, no matter how many podcasts you and I do that expose it, no matter how many Mike Winger does, there's going to be somebody who can push it forward, because they've created this platform where they've rewired the heads to believe that this thing is prophecy, so that the leaders can step up and hijack their minds. That's the cycle that will continue.
Everyone who eats of the bitter fruit gets sick. Everyone gets poisoned from this. No one is getting out of this okay. No one is getting any sustenance from this corrupt and abusive system. And that's why when I am so passionate about tearing this system down, people will say, can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's all sickness. It's all corrupt. But throwing this out is only going to benefit literally every single person involved in this community. Even the leaders there, because you can't. That's just the nature of the world that we live in. You cannot give yourself over to vices and expect flourishing within your own life. It corrupts. It pulls you apart.
You know, I spent a large part of my childhood in Georgia, and we would be out and we would play in the ground, and the ground is red clay. And when you get the stuff on you, it's this thick muck that just doesn't come off. And I can assure you that there are some bathwaters that you do need to let out and get some bathwater to finish cleaning the baby. So thank you for doing this. Hopefully people will flush out that nasty bathwater and get something better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.